welcome to the ICAEW Insights in Focus podcast with news and analysis from the world of accountancy, business and finance. I'm Philippa Lamb, and today we're discussing business challenges, including energy cost, recruitment and retention, and wage inflation. To explore those issues, we're joined by ICAEW Head of Business, Simon Gray, and Katie Davis, Managing Director at manufacturer Camden Boss. The headlines don't make easy reading lately. The Bank of England says the recession is here, inflation remains a serious anxiety, and sterling is still struggling against both the dollar and the euro. Perhaps unsurprisingly, business is growing nervous about what's still to come. The latest ICAEW Business Confidence Monitor finds sentiment turning negative for the first time since late 2020, and all sectors and regions experiencing a cost of doing business crisis. Simon, Katie, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Hi, good to be here.
Simon, you speak to ICAEW members in business daily. What do they tell you are their main challenges right now?
There are a multitude of challenges that ICAEW members talk to me about. I would say the principal two challenges that I hear the most are centred around the cost of energy and also access to skills, retention and recruitment of talent. They're the two biggies at the moment, but there are a plethora of other challenges facing businesses currently.
Katie, you're MD of Camden Boss. Can you tell us a bit about the company?
So we're a medium-sized manufacturer based up in sunny Mildenhall in Suffolk. We employ about 120 people and we design and manufacture electromechanical components, connectors and enclosures for the electronics industry.
Simon was talking about energy costs there. How exposed is your business to rising energy costs? I mean, even in the wake of the government support announced so far.
In terms of our industrial processes, we feel like we're an intensive energy user when our bill lands on the doorstep. But by kind of definitions, we're not a forge. We're not casting metal. We're not manufacturing plastic itself, even though it's our main raw material. We're just a very normal kind of industrial user of electricity. But I mean, it's absolutely ravaged our budget this year. We had a fixed deal, as with so many manufacturers and domestic people. We had a fixed deal that ended partway through this year and just left us absolutely, at the market's behest, really. So it's been really, really painful, really painful.
I mean, what do you make of what the government has offered you on that front?
I feel like I have a very short-termist reaction to it because it's just taken one thing off the list to worry about at the moment. You know, so we managed to fix a deal that lasts until May next year. So I'd assumed that whatever the government came out with, whatever measures they came out with, we probably wouldn't be eligible because, you know, we're in a deal. We're not as bad as a lot of our other peers. You know, we managed to find an okay deal. It's still more than, you know, a couple of years ago we would have ever settled for, but for right now it's not too bad. So it gave us a bit of surety in the short term. But to find out that the relief package would actually benefit us quite considerably and that we were eligible has just been brilliant, actually. So very short-termist view. It's given us some definite relief. However, there is that long-term fear of, but it'll probably bite us somewhere else in the longer term, I'm sure. But certainly for now, it's taken one stress off our plate. And I think what it's done for us, as well as a lot of other kind of, particularly manufacturers, I guess, you know, it's just revised our business cases. So the other thing that we've done beyond that is we've installed solar panels on the roof and they were commissioned just yesterday. So it's flipped on its head, you know, a business case that probably 12 months ago wasn't giving us the payback that we quite thought. It wasn't, you know, that high up on the pecking order, but now it's a complete no-brainer. So it's...
That's interesting. Yeah. It stacks up now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we haven't seen much of a break between the pandemic and the challenges everyone is now facing. What has that meant for the resilience of your business?
It's been a long stretch, hasn't it? It's definitely been an endurance event. I think being ever the optimist and with my glass half full, I think it has made every business. So again, I'm kind of operating in the SME sphere. You know, we have an inherent weakness within SMEs of just relying on a small team of experts and kind of relying on their brains to carry around with them all the knowledge you could possibly need to ever run the business, you know, and therefore if somebody does leave or, you know, chooses to retire or whatever, you're left a bit weak. I think what it's made us do is really look at our foundations and really address our own business resilience in terms of kind of making sure that we're not just reliant on people should they, you know, obviously the COVID pandemic kind of brought that into sharp focus as we were losing people, you know, out sick. So I think, you know, on the plus side, it's been a stark reminder to all of us to make sure that our business resilience is there and that you've got good footings to get you through, or at least take the kind of the sting out of the day-to-day tasks that we're doing, so that actually our brain power and our energy is saved for the difficult bits and the fancy footwork around the challenges we're having to negotiate.
That's interesting. So you're managing what you can manage,
yeah,
to kind of future-proof you against the stuff you can't.
I'd like to think so. Yeah, that's definitely our aim. It's a long process. I think in terms of the, you know, our own resilience in terms of energy levels, mental health, and all of those things that you know we hear about a lot. I think we've got a very tired workforce. You can absolutely see where, you know, friends that I have working in the corporate finance space, for instance, they're seeing kind of owner managers just saying, I'm tired. I think I just want to sell my business. I can't go through another blah crisis. You know, I don't know how much more I've got to give. So I think we're certainly really mindful that on a personal level, everyone's resilience is getting, it's been challenged for a long time, and we've definitely got some tired people, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Simon, what do you make of the support for business we've seen from the government so far? I mean, obviously, this is a brand new administration, but good points, missed opportunities. What's your feeling?
I mean, I think the energy bill relief scheme for businesses, that could have come a little bit sooner. I'm glad it's here now. I talked to businesses about that last week when it was announced. The initial reaction was great. It's here. We've got some comfort for 6 months at least. But the bigger question is what happens after 6 months. What I'm getting from businesses is that, you know, businesses like certainty, and we're living in a very, very uncertain world. And I think in terms of policy decisions, it's almost this kind of stop or start, stop, and then potentially reverse, which makes it very, very difficult for businesses to plan. So, you know, some of the announcements that came out last week in the mini budget, you know, around corporation tax, national insurance, you know, were welcomed. IR35, again, welcome. But it's this kind of stop start and not being certain where policy direction may go, you know, in the next 6 to 12 months or even sooner, that is really hurting businesses' ability to plan and do what they do best, which is, you know, operate in an environment of stability. We're in a very unstable world at the moment.
Is there a sense that perhaps the focus is very much on big business rather than small business SMEs?
I think bigger businesses, they are better able to weather the storm. They have more expertise in-house. They have the cash reserves to be able to survive during a, you know, a difficult period. Smaller businesses are the backbone of the UK economy. You know, there are pressures on skills that smaller businesses are going to feel much more acutely. And because in a smaller business, I used to run a small business myself, you know, you are running a business, you're doing all sorts of different things in that business. As Katie said, you've got your eye on many, many different balls. You're spinning lots of different plates. It's a very, very different environment. And with so many things happening at the moment and impacting business, in a smaller business, you are going to feel it much, much, much more for a multitude of different reasons.
Yeah, and things like corporation tax aren't an issue, are they, for small business?
Well, the thing is with corporation tax, you know, you've got to be making profits to pay tax. And if your business isn't sustainable because of the challenges that it's facing and is not profitable currently, there are squeezes on margins, you're not quite sure where your business is going, you know, while maintaining corporation tax at its current level is welcomed, it's not the most pressing issue for businesses. You know, it's a nice to have that rate has come down. Is it going to encourage more people to start businesses? Is it going to encourage more people not to consider selling their businesses now because of the challenges they're facing, as you just alluded to? I'm not sure it is.
Katie, as we've been chatting about, we've got the government's short-term energy plans confirmed. There is a lot of uncertainty ahead. How are you adjusting business operations? You've talked to us a bit about resilience, about how you're trying to safeguard the organisation. But what about actual business operations?
The sort of shock of COVID and having to alter your operations generally, it sent us back to basics on a lot of fronts. So again, probably partly linked to the resilience piece I talked about a minute ago. You know, actually, have we got the most sensible processes in place? Are we over-egging anything? Because we used to have a bit of luxury of a bit more time in our day because we were, you know, used to just, you know, order something and it would arrive with no sweat or, you know, not a furrowed brow. So from a business operations standpoint, I think it's really accelerated us on kind of our journey to really look at kind of lean principles and really really challenge everything that we do from a, is this the best way of doing it standpoint, it's absolutely driven us to look at more digital solutions. And again, it's really hard to tease out what's driving what, because we've had such a complex set of kind of challenges. You know, partly it helps with the skills and labour angle, but certainly from a resilience standpoint, you know, the ability to access, you know, the market of amazing digital solutions to help us do things, it's definitely accelerated us down that journey. And again, from a, you know, again, focusing on the energy piece, you know, sustainability as a subject, it's quite interesting. On a lot of kind of calls or in discussions with other business owners, they're sort of saying, oh, well, we've just part the sustainability agenda because it's a nice to have. It feels like a nice to have right now. But actually, you know, the workforce can really easily engage with that. You know, it's very relatable. They understand what that is because we have the same, you know, the same focuses domestically. You know, from our business operations standpoint, it's definitely kind of accelerated that, because the guys, you know, even talking to the guys on my shop floor yesterday, we're at a moment where if you walk around my site, sometimes it looks like there's nobody here because they don't, you know, they're so hot on turning the lights off, but they just want to feel like they're helping with something because they've got a domestic energy challenge and they know that, you know, in the off, you know, at work, it's not dissimilar. You know, we leave lights on when we leave a room, and actually that's coming out of the you know, the funds that pay for their salaries and things. So it's very lovely that we've got people looking to help. So actually our sustainability agenda is kind of accelerating a bit because again, people can contribute to that quite easily. So it's having a really interesting impact on our business operations in ways that I hadn't necessarily expected at the start.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, that's really heartening, isn't it? But it sounds like you're having supply chain issues.
It's really fascinating. So, you know, again, trying to tease out what caused what or what happened at what point, it's just a big old blur, isn't it? So, you know, partly COVID related, partly Brexit driven, you know, we've had to adapt a lot in terms of our supply chains. And again, going back to that resilience, to whittle down our partners in a way, you know, when you're in a stress situation in any walk of life, you know, you like to work with people that you can trust. And it's been fascinating the last couple of years seeing the behaviour that you get from some of your customers and some of your suppliers in terms of, right, we're in this together, guys, let's help each other out and we really work together. You know, we've got so much complexity going on, it's been great from that relationship standpoint. I think we've seen some really disappointing stuff from areas of our supply chain where you think, actually, you know, we are in this together, guys, you know. And so for instance, without naming any names, we had a supplier this week, we'd already placed an order, they came back to us and said, yeah, we're going to ship it, but you've got a 750% price increase.
Wow.
And that's just, you know, you think, what have you done that for? With, you know, I'm now gonna completely eradicate you from my supply chain because I don't want to work with somebody that does that to us. And they, you know, we'd already confirmed our end price to the customer,
so you'll take the hit on that
ethically. I'm not going back to that customer. Yeah, absolutely, because we're in, you know, in a position where you have to do it and you think, oh, it's really disappointing and it's very short-termist, when actually, you know, we need to be coming out of this all collectively, you know, stronger and with a better working relationship. So yeah, supply chains are definitely challenging. And I think, again, it's really hard to tell. And I had this conversation with my team when we reflected after Brexit, you know, had it got easier or had we just got very British about it and stopped moaning because it was, you know, it is what it is, you know, in a very British way. So I think, you know, the teams are dealing with it very well, but it's definitely taking up such a massive amount of their day where it really wasn't at all in the past. You know, again, they had the days of, you know, placing an order, wait for it to arrive, here it comes, out it goes, you know, very, very straightforward. Whereas now it's kind of negotiating, you know, shipping container availability, you know, shipping routes, where is the ship, how long is it going to be here, is there a strike at the port, and all of that complexity that's just really taking up their day. So yeah, supply chains are really, really challenging for us. But again, you know, certainly what we're looking to do is very similar to what's kind of helping us, again, trying to be a bit optimistic. You know, we're definitely seeing that push for reshoring to the UK, and it's going to be an interesting point with our customers and with the market, seeing how, you know, because we can't compete on cost all the time with China. You know, it's a totally different setup over there, it's a totally different labor structure. But actually, for that peace of mind of somebody being able to whiz along the A11 and come and visit us and, you know, see where their stuff is getting made, see where it's being dispatched, if the worst comes to the worst, come and pick it up themselves if we have, you know, a real disaster, I think that's certainly a trend that I think and I hope is going to continue for a while yet.
Simon, it's a great analysis from Katie. Really rational. You know, there's good stuff, but there are some serious challenges. Let's take a look at your business confidence monitor, because that tells us sentiment has turned negative across the board. So this is all sectors, all regions. I know your data highlights labour shortages and wage inflation as really significant issues.
I mean, the business confidence monitor for Q3 has turned into negative territory, and I don't think there's kind of any surprise there. It's gone negative across all regions. London is flatlining, so London's at zero. And the end of the period, of course, for the Business Confidence Monitor was mid-July for that Q3 results. So we are...
So a while
yeah,
back.
So we're, yeah, so we're kind of 10 weeks, we're 10 weeks on, and arguably things have got a lot worse since then. I know we've had some, you know, reliefs announced, but the situation is becoming more complex. Uncertainty around the situation, I think, is becoming, well, for want of a better word, more uncertain. Wage inflation is a very interesting factor here. I can speak on this as somebody who spent 12 years in the recruitment industry. That was my business back in the day. So I've worked in the recruitment space, and I talk to businesses all the time about their challenges with skills, retention of staff and recruitment. And of course, the cost of living crisis has now bitten hard, and it's bitten people hard. So there is increased pressure on businesses to pay staff more to help them with the challenges they're facing at home. Linked to this as well, there's been a reduced supply of labour. Post-COVID, less people looking for work, you know, unemployment at record low levels. So businesses have had to chase skills harder. And to chase skills harder, you have to pay people more. So there's a number of different factors here that are leading to pressure on wages. And in certain sectors where skills are very hard to find because those skills take years to develop, the pressure is even more because you can't suddenly magic somebody up with the right skills. It's going to take 2 or 3 years to train them. So that, again, has extrapolated challenges. And businesses are being very creative when it comes to wage inflation. You know, one of the challenges with paying somebody an increased wage or an increased salary is once you do that, it's baked in. You're not going to turn that round in 6 months' time. You know, if raw material prices come down in 6 months' time, they come down and you can pass that on to your end customer. But if you suddenly start talking to your staff about cutting wages that they've got used to earning, that's not going to go down very well. So businesses have been creative. They've looked at other things that they can do. Could they pay a bonus? Could they provide food at work to help with the cost of living crisis? Some businesses I talk to, you know, they're giving I guess you would call it a winter allowance to some of their staff. Who are the lowest paid in their workforce to help them get through the winter and pay their energy bills. Wage inflation is probably one of the biggest risks, I would say, to the economy. And I think this is where, you know, the Bank of England has some quite big concerns on inflation because it's a different type of inflation. And as I've said, once it's in, it's in. And once you have wage inflation in the system, it's self-perpetuating. And it's very hard to get it out. We're seeing increased strikes across a number of different industries. We're seeing, you know, a lot of pressure now to raise wages. And businesses, of course, it's eating into margins. They're worried about what happens long term. At a macroeconomic level, you know, the Bank of England will be concerned. Wage inflation is in. It's here to stay. We need to stop inflation. We need to get back to that 2% target.
Yeah, I mean, Katie Simon's given us a really good picture there. What is happening in your sector? Are you having problems hiring and keeping the right people?
The skills challenge is kind of twofold. You've got the skills part and you've got the labour availability part. I think it's very sector specific and I think it's very like regionalised. So for instance, you know, talking to some of my colleagues in manufacturing based in kind of the West Midlands, you've got a real concentration of specific skills, and that is driving just crazy things in terms of wage inflation because they're fishing from the same pool. You know, they're all fighting for the most skilled, you know, machinists or whatever specific discipline it is. It's really tight. I think in the east, certainly along the A11 corridor where I find myself, you know, we've got a lot of manufacturers, so there's definitely competition there amongst businesses for our local labour pools. But actually, labour availability seems to be okay. As a company, we are very committed to our people strategy, so I like to think that we are creating an environment where people like to work. And I think that counts for an awful lot, especially at the moment where people are going through a rough time. And we're very lucky that we don't have anybody in the local area that's done something really crazy to fracture the kind of the wage structures that we've got here. That, you know, and certainly nowhere near what our colleagues are seeing in the West Midlands.
I mean, as you say, in the Eastern region, it's a more diverse employer landscape there.
Yeah.
So you don't face those issues of more concentrated employment competition.
It's just a different challenge, yeah. Just a different challenge, I think, or a different type of competition, yeah.
But you are, I mean, as you say, you want to hold on to your workforce. You want to build a relationship with them that's long-term, it's sustainable. You're helping them out now. I mean,
it does.
And a rising tide, of course, it lifts all boats, doesn't it? So presumably the pressure to put up pay, it's going to come. Do you see yourself having to raise prices as a result of that?
It's a really hard balancing act. So with the supply chain challenges that we've talked about previously, you know, we're still seeing price increase after price increase coming from our supply chain. There is a point at which we just can't sustain it in our onward, you know, price increases out to our customers. It's a really tight balance. So, you know, if we look down our customer pipelines, we've already got some of our customers whose orders are cooling off a bit because all of a sudden their product is probably priced out of the market. You know, if they pass on all the costs that they can, it gets to a point where you just can't sustain it. So stuff just stops. So it's an incredibly hard balancing act, but there's only so much that we can continue to absorb. And, you know, the release valve that we've got is our pricing to our customers. So we try to be fair, we try to be open and transparent with those customers so that they can see what is driving that. But it's the only outlet valve that we've got beyond, you know, shedding heads. We're not a very large business. We haven't got many heads to shed, and we need them all. They're all busy. Everybody's working really hard.
Simon, what about ways of working? I mean, the pandemic changed people's expectations around work, didn't it? Do you think that's structural change? And I mean, it's not across the board, is it? What does your research tell you about that?
I'm glad you asked me this question. I was going to mention it. Hybrid working and how people work, it has really changed the landscape. And it's, I guess it's caused additional challenges in the labour market and the ability for businesses to secure skills. You know, for example, in Katie's business, hybrid working, aside from office staff, is probably not really an option. In other businesses, it is. One of the things businesses have told me is that as somebody looking for a job now, you have a national and to some degree an international opportunity. So, you know, one of the things with leveling up and retaining skills in a region, people can now say work wherever they're paid the most. If they're working on a hybrid basis and maybe traveling one day a week, if that, to an office. So I think we've seen the landscape change. And I think businesses are still very uncertain as to how to respond to the demands of employees who, if they can have it, they want, you know, they want the hybrid working, offers them flexibility. And I don't think businesses has quite yet worked out where the line in the sand is. Is it 2 days? Is it 3 days? Is it fully remote? And it's kind of a wait and see. You know, you watch what one business does and then you kind of look at that. There's been this 4 day working week trial. That's happened. That's it's delivered, you know, mixed results.
Mixed results.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. One of the things that we haven't necessarily touched on, but is related to all of this, is productivity. And we have a fairly poor track record in the UK on productivity in recent years. You know, one of the ways that we can, you know, try and achieve this very ambitious growth target that's been set up by the government, and one of the ways that we can work smarter is through increased productivity, but that generally requires investment. Is now the time for businesses to invest? There's a whole host of factors at play here, and it's a bit like trying to juggle jelly. It's quite difficult to do, and to keep all those things moving in the right direction. And which do you prioritize? But the productivity question is a really, really big supply side question that we need to answer in this country.
But we don't yet have hard data on how that actually plays into productivity, do we? So that's the difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, we're putting kind of big bets on the demand side, you know, trickle-down economics to drive economic growth. But, you know, what the Business Confidence Monitor told us, and what I still hear, is that in many businesses, order books are strong. The challenge is, as Katie's alluded to, is on the supply side. And how do you access those raw materials? I was talking to a business the other day who's got a 50-week lead time just to get parts that go into their production process. You know, that's not sustainable. And this is a 50-week lead time at a higher price. You know, Katie talked about pricing and you asked a question about passing on prices to customers. It's very, very tricky. You know, you might have an annual price increase a few years ago. I hear of businesses now raising prices on a 6-monthly basis, some even on a quarterly basis, because they have to survive. And of course, that spills through the supply chain and lands with the end customer, which puts more pressure on cost of living crisis if it's, you know, the end consumer. So it's a really, really challenging thing. And reshoring, onshoring is something I think we need to look at more closely. Katie mentioned it. to bring our supply chain closer to home. Obviously, that reduced our cost of delivery as well. There's been, you know, inflation in freight costs, which is starting to come down now, thankfully. But that all takes time. And we find ourselves in a situation in this country now where we're very clear on what the challenges are. We need a solution now. But unfortunately, the real robust solutions to address many of these issues are not something that you can deliver in the short term. They're longer, well, medium to longer term, real infrastructure changes, policy changes that take time to bring in. We almost haven't got the tools right now to address the problems we have right now, because the tools that we really need take time to bed in.
We've mentioned regional differences. What about levelling up? We haven't heard much about that lately, have we? We had that white paper in February outlining training and education as an area of focus for government. I think that was $3.8 billion pledge for skills investment by 2024-25.
We did.
What do you think is going to happen with that now?
Levelling up has been around for many years in various different guises. It's hard to argue with a proposition that we need to take some of the heat off the London economy and distribute some of the wealth out to the regions. But how we do that is the really big question. I read the Levelling Up white paper, and there's some very, very ambitious plans in there, the 12 missions. But what I saw from that paper and what ICAW members have told me is, yes, in principle, it all makes sense. It all looks like a very, very sensible thing to do. But the difficulty is the implementation and the action behind the mission and how we actually do that on the ground. You know, our regions operate in different ways depending on which region you're in. There are different political landscapes in regions. You've got certain regions that have electoral mayors, others that don't. Some regions have devolution deals, some don't. So we're not really on a level playing field to even begin that task of levelling up. And one of the key elements to levelling up is making sure that we have people in the right jobs, developing the right skills for the needs of the businesses in the regions. It has gone off the ball a little bit. We don't hear about it too much at the moment. I think levelling up will need to come back onto the political agenda fairly soon, but I think it's deprioritized based on energy and the other challenges that businesses are currently facing. Linked to energy and the energy crisis, and Katie talked about this a moment ago, I do think we have a huge opportunity in this country around green skills. We don't train and we don't develop enough green skills to deliver the green energy that we need in this country. And then linked to that, of course, we have the access to kit, which we've talked about in terms of the supply chain. But I do think that's a really big opportunity. And that's where the regions could play a key role. You know, localized supply of energy, all of these things, all of these considerations that are currently going on in the energy sector. It does feed into levelling up, and levelling up has a part to play in that.
Katie, the plan was back in February to put employers at the heart of skills and training. But what support would you actually need as a business to make that a reality? I appreciate you have your own initiatives, but what would you need?
The skills landscape is just so fascinating and it's just so complex. I think it really depends what that looks like. So, you know, we've got a lot of employers, again, using the current pressures as a bit of a glass half full moment. You know, because we have a labour pressure, we are seeing employers looking at different routes for bringing people into their business and upskilling themselves because they're having to. So actually, it's probably quite a good, you know, firelighter underneath things that probably should have been happening always. So, you know, we look at, you know, ex-offender recruitment's really good, you know, so there are some really positive bits that are coming on. I think the skills piece is so complex that it would be really interesting to see what that looks like with levelling up. I think speaking to other employers, and it's not even just a manufacturing issue. And without making this question, you know, exploding this question into something too big, I think there was so much dissatisfaction with the kind of the current education system that is feeding the labour force in the first place that, you know, I quite admire kind of Liz Truss's bravery and the boldness that she's kind of started out with. If she's very brave, it would be amazing to see that kind of education piece get a bit kind of more addressed in a more radical way, so that actually we're getting people coming into the workforce who are better equipped to deal with you know, the creativity challenges that we're looking for and all of that stuff. The apprenticeship levy is a really fascinating one. I think that the problem that we've got with it, certainly from my view of the world, you know, we're a levy payer. We spend about 250% of the levy that we pay over to the government because you can overspend. And it's a great cheap way of getting our existing staff upskilled, just as it is getting new apprentices into the workforce. So I don't really have, from a personal standpoint, don't have much of a problem with the levy. So if we're looking at the skills that we need, you know, I need my guys to be trained up on how to use CNC machines, which are kind of bread and butter machines in our production area that are kind of set to a program on how to cut out the piece parts that we then manufacture. So there's a cutting tool attached and the very technical bits of programming attached to it as well. Yeah, that requires capital investment from the colleges to be able to train people on how to use those bits of kit. You know, it's not cheap, but actually they're getting paid per head the same as people that are just offering, you know, business studies qualifications, which require a desk and a chair. You know, so it's a real challenge for us. So I think the support that would mean the most to me is to those education providers to allow us to get the technical bits done and to continue to support businesses with either incentives or some sort of mechanism to support the internal training that we do for those staff. But to a degree, we'd need to do that anyway. So I think that the biggest piece for me is that external piece for the training providers to make sure that we've got that pipeline coming.
Simon, Katie, thanks for being with us and sharing your thoughts on what we know so far. Some clarity, I think it's fair to say, but a lot of questions remaining unanswered and obviously business confidence clearly suffering. That's it for this episode. Thanks for being with us. You can catch the next Insights podcast in early October when we'll be sharing advice on the queries and concerns we hear most often from members with ICAEW consultant David Stevens. The next In Focus podcast, where we'll take a deeper dive into the economic challenges facing the UK right now, that will air later in October. Join us for those two. And meantime, please do rate, review and share this episode. And remember to subscribe to ICAEW Insights wherever you get your podcasts.